the International Conference Room, 17th floor, number 2 building. Then on Sunday, the 19th of January at 7 p.m., I'll be speaking in Kyoto at the Kyoto Kyoiku Bunka Center. That's the Kyoto Education Culture Center. On Monday, we'll be back here in Tokyo. That's January 20th. And I'll be speaking at the Foreign Correspondents Club of Japan, the FCCJ, for a noon talk. You can check our website at democracynow.org for all the details of these 3 days of talks. Then we'll be headed to the Sundance Film Festival in Park City, Utah, where we'll be broadcasting after the Martin Luther King holiday, Tuesday to Friday. Many thanks to the talented staff here at NHK International, also to Mac Shimamoto and Ward Broadcasting. A very special thanks to the volunteers of Democracy Now! Japan, who run our Japanese language website, democracynow.jp, Makiko Nakano and Hideko Atake and Mariko Sakare and Kyoko Hoshiyama, Fusei Seki and Eri Takada, Asako Kato and Louis Curran. Thanks so much to all our team that's worked on this broadcast. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Berkernay, Fel Saramate, Nirmin Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Akhav, Hani Masood, Rabbi Karen, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield. Special thanks to John Hamilton and Dennis Moynihan. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding cities. How are you doing out there? Today is January the 17th, 2014. We survived a little snowfall last night, and everybody got here today, and the roads are pretty clear, so things are good. How are things with you? Dennis Reimars, our WHFR News Director.
Hello, Jay. Honestly, based on the weather this morning, I had to get up at just an incredibly early hour for me. I had to have somebody at work at 6 a.m. I didn't even know there was a 6 a.m.
Uh-oh.
But the roads were just horrendous at that point. And then on my way back from Ann Arbor, they were clear. It was like magic. The snow fairies came out and got rid of everything. And seriously, the roads are pretty darn good now.
Yeah, except some of course, the side streets, a little slushy, and just be careful out there, folks.
Sure.
Okay,
it's
Michigan winter, okay? No reason to get fear and panic, but just be careful, okay? Well, we have special guests in the studio for our first segment, and it is, I'll first introduce the person who's head of the Assisted Learning Services Department at Henry Ford Community College, Maureen Webster. What is Assisted Learning Services? First of all, welcome to WHFR, Maureen. This your first interview on the air here, too.
Yes, it is.
Oh, my goodness. This is a baptism, sort of. Yeah. But tell us about Assisted Learning Services. I remember a few years ago, it was the office had different names, but what sort of learning services do you assist with? It's not the same thing as some of the help in the library, the learning center. Right? It's a little different.
It's somewhat different. And thanks again very much for having us, for having me here today with Kadar and Yasmin Farhat. Mm-hmm. And Jay and Dennis, I'll tell you a little bit about our area. Years ago, we were called the Special Needs Office. We changed our name with Catherine Grail's guidance when she was our instructor advisor, and we took the name Assisted Learning Services. This office is designed to provide accommodations for students with disabilities. The accommodations really range, Jay and Dennis, from interpreters for the hearing impaired, adaptive equipment for visually impaired, note takers, extended time on tests, some tutoring, and other services to try to ensure success for all the students at Henry Ford.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and it's a very, very important job, because we do want to give access to everyone who wants to come here and learn and improve their life, of course. How many students do you assist with in that office? We have about, 15,000 or 16,000 students regularly most semesters here at the college. And how many have sought out your help?
You know, it really ranges from semester to semester. Mm-hmm. It's sometimes we've had over 1,000 students who have been enrolled for a variety of services, some of them ranging from professional tutoring to interpreters, as I said, for the hearing impaired. Mm-hmm. Some of the students will come in on a regular basis, and other students we'll see for midterms and finals. So it really does change depending on the student body each semester, but I'd say on an average maybe around 600.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're very busy then. And your office is located on campus in the?
In the Learning Resources Center, and it's room 125. It's on the first floor.
That
building has taken on several names. Student Success Center is another name for it, and also Veronica and Joseph Hallisey North Hall was the original name.
Oh, yeah. Times have changed. Okay. It's the same building that the Learning Center is in on the higher floor, isn't it?
Yes, and you had asked about the Learning Lab. The
Learning Lab
is on the on the second floor of the Learning Resources Center, and that's a wonderful facility devoted to drop-in tutoring, workshops, and seminars to assist all the students on campus in a variety of subject areas ranging from reading, writing, math, science, foreign language, and other workshop-related classes that they assist with.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let's get to our very, very special guest, your special Marine, but Kadar and his sister Yasmin are here to tell us about their story and their situation and how they got here. So, Kadar, take it away. Last name is Farhat, right?
Yes.
Correct.
I just first want to thank you guys for having us, for giving me this opportunity just to talk about some of my experience and some of the ideas and thoughts that I think the community needs to know about. So I came here in 2009 to the United States. I was in a freshman level in high school. I live in Dearborn, but I had to go to Lincoln Park High School just because the services for the visually impaired were down there.
I didn't know that.
Okay. Yes, I went there, and you know, the teachers and some counselors, they first, you know, they doubt at first, and I don't blame them, because just coming from total different country, different language, and with low vision, that kind of hard. So they wanted just to see how I'm gonna do. So one of the things I remembered they suggested was to come here to Dearborn schools, take like bilingual classes. Mm-hmm. I didn't really like it because I just thought my graduation will be delayed. Mm-hmm. So I just thought I will take it. You know, I will take it. It's my responsibility. I came to this country looking for a better life, prosperous future with being disabled. So this is what happened. You know, I truly proved myself. I got really outstanding grades, and I got exempt from all the finals because they had that policy where you reach certain absence, you know, like three or less absences, excused absences, mm-hmm. two or less tardies, and then good grades, you get exempt.
That's cool.
Yeah, so I got exempt from all the finals. I got really featured from the Exchange Club in the city of Lincoln Park. I do thank them so much for being for choosing me, actually, as the youth of January 2012 and the youth of year 2012. And also, the school administration itself, they honored me a lot of times, just in a gold academic achievement, excellent academic achievements. And till I graduated on time, and then I came here to Henry Ford Community College, the first time I met Mrs. Maureen, mm-hmm. which I want to thank her for coming today. And this office helps a lot. You know, personally, I just usually come to the office to get Mrs. Maureen's opinion about class registration. I also get some help in scanning and sometime in testing. I think it is a very good idea. Now, if you just please let me just say one last thing before,
sure.
if you have any more question.
Mm-hmm.
Now, beside my schooling, after I finished high school, I just thought that I have some free time. And since I do see my friends, they are 95%, they are sighted people. I see that a lot of visually impaired individuals like my age, you know, from my meetings with the Lions governor and some other people, they tell me that we don't really find an active, young, visually impaired guy like me. You know what I mean?
Hmm.
Okay, so this is what they said. So that's why I'm trying to reach out for the whole community. I'm knocking every single door, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Just to improve the situation. So what I need to say, after I finished high school, I started volunteering in several places, such as the Detroit Medical Center, the Westland Library for the Blind, Sewing County Regional Library for the Blind. Mm-hmm. I go there, I help them with whatever they want. We will set up some new strategies and ideas just to improve the visually impaired lifestyle, you know, even as far as technology or school performance. And also, I am willing to work with anyone that really have any opinion. You know, I always get some Facebook messages or Twitter messages. I always respond, you know, as I have to, as I see it suitable, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I do appreciate every single community member that really cooperates, and with cooperation, with togetherness, you know, all of us together, we could face it and we could change it to a better lifestyle.
Well, we were certainly honored to have you here at Henry Ford Community College, and the community does need very strong advocates for people who, in the previous term of Maureen Webster's office, that have special needs, because, you know, it is possible for society to accommodate everyone. There are ways to do it. It's just the awareness of the issues and the problem is the key issue, and then once people are aware, then solutions can be found. What, if I may ask you, what sort of program do you think you're going to major in? Sounds like you want to be an advocate, and therefore you want to communicate a lot, so you might be interested in sociology and maybe telecommunications.
I wanted to go first, as far as my major, I wanted to be a physical therapist, to be honest.
Oh, cool. So, yeah.
But I took Mrs. Maureen's opinion. I also, we took the Henry Ford Community College's PTA director opinion. I called myself the Wayne State University, and I talked with their PT director, the physical therapy program director.
Sure.
They always told me that I could make it successfully through schooling. Mm-hmm. Like I could pass the classes, mm-hmm. but they don't want me just to take the degree and don't get a job, because nowadays, as you said earlier, that everything is mostly depend on technology nowadays. So it depends a lot on vision. So they all advised me if I want to do something similar to it would be kind of clinical massage therapy. But then I thought, if I don't want to reach physical therapy, I will just specialize in my strongest field, since it's my life like this, since born.
Right.
Since I was born, you know. So I will specialize basically in this visually impaired field. Now, that could be visually impaired teacher, that could be a counselor, that could be working in the special education department of the state of Michigan. Mm-hmm. So in the fall of 2014, I'll graduate hopefully with a pre-special ed. I mean, it's my goal, mm-hmm. and I'm working mm-hmm. on it.
Sure.
So I will graduate with a pre-special education associate degree, and then I will move on to Eastern Michigan University just to finish my bachelor's, and then why not my master's and my doctorate. Mm-hmm. And just about that communication part for your question. Yes, as I said, since I graduated, now a lot of people downriver, they know me just from my volunteering. I also made a couple other interviews with local newspapers here in Dearborn, a college newspaper. I want to thank them all. Mm-hmm. So I am reaching out, yes, and very soon I'm working on something really good, you know, with some of the blind lawyers, if you don't mind me saying his name, George Bernstein.
Okay.
I'm working on meeting him next Thursday just to see how together mm-hmm. could work and how he could help me, how could I help him, and just to make something.
You're doing the research that you need to do. Actually, most students need to do equal amount of research to find out careers and classes that are possible for them, depending on their own interest and their own abilities. And you're on the right track, certainly here. Henry Ford Community College does provide a great variety of challenges, academic challenges, and I think you'll get a good start for whatever you're going to finally get to. If I can just, Yasmin, your sister is sitting right next to you here, and I'd just like to ask her, what sort of program are you interested in here at Henry Ford Community College, because you have a similar challenge that your brother does.
First, thank you for having us here. My major is also special education, because I feel it's like this is my strongest point, because I feel with the blind students, mm-hmm. I know what they need. So maybe I can like let them know or like have the knowledge mm-hmm. Like as possible, because you know, like I'm visually impaired, and If you don't mind, please, can I talk about my experience here when I came?
Yeah, we have briefly, just a couple more minutes in this segment. Go ahead.
When I came here to the States, it was like 2009. I signed up for classes here in HFCC. I didn't have anything, no help. I went to Mrs. Maureen Webster's office. They provide me a note taker and someone to help me to read. But it was really hard because I have to look for like good instructors. They want to help me because I don't have like anything, no computer, nothing, because you know it takes time to take these things from Commission for the Blind. Mm-hmm. So it was really, really hard. But what I wish and hope, like everyone will think about it, I can do it. That's the thing they have to think about. Only I can do it. And they can do it because like all my classes, I'm past all my classes, I'm trying my best, and now I'm okay. I get everything, like I get help from everyone.
Right. You know the system. You sort of know the routine, you might say, too.
Yes.
That's important for everybody to learn.
Yeah. And to like maybe to be like outgoing, you don't have to be like embarrassed or shy. If you need like help, you have to ask for it.
Absolutely, yeah. I try to tell all my students that, and I don't get that many questions, unfortunately. But that's what teachers are for, is to answer the questions as much as they can, of course.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Kadar and Yasmin, for being with us here. Is there a final comment you want to make, Kadar?
Yes, I want to thank you again. I want to thank Mrs. Susan McGraw, because we've been working since the last 5-6 weeks just to get this done.
Mm-hmm.
I truly appreciate it. Once again, I want to thank you. Thank Mrs. Maureen
Mr. Webster, Denise,
mm-hmm. Dennis. And also, one last thing. I truly wish all of us that hearing us just to, as my sister said, do not be embarrassed. Nothing is out of reach. I will reach that dream. It's just a matter of time.
Oh,
and I hope all the cooperation from all the community clubs and community members. Thank you so much.
I'm sure it'll be forthcoming. Thank you so much for being on the journal. Maureen, just a final comment, and thank you, Yasmin. How can people who might be considering Henry Ford Community College and think they might need the help of assisted learning services, how can they get in touch with you and or the office? Actually, your email is really simple. I love it.
Yes,
Go ahead.
Our email is als@hfcc.edu. Once again, we're located in the Learning Resources Center, 125. Our phone number is 313-845-9617. And we will be happy to answer questions or get you started and try to help you to be successful at Henry Ford. I'd also like to thank Jay and Dennis and Kadar and Yasmin for this opportunity. We really appreciate your time today. Thank you.
Yeah. Good luck to all of you. Well, all yes.
Just
one final note.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Sorry about that. And if anybody has anything, any idea, they could follow me on Twitter at Kador_Farhat, KHOD like David, R_Farhat, FARHAT, or on Facebook, Kador Farhat, and I'm willing to work with everybody else.
Well,
thank you so much.
Appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to have you listen now to one of our regular segments of Jim Hightower, who is a progressive commentator out of Texas, and he's talking about an important issue of antibiotics not working for us so much anymore. So take a listen. We'll be back with more of the new WHFR Journal on WHFR.fm, the station making waves.
Can antibiotic medicines, long hailed as miracle drugs, be too much of a good thing? Yes. Two factors are at work here. First, bacteria, one of the earliest forms of life on Earth, are miracles in their own right, with a stunning ability to outsmart the antibiotic drugs through rapid evolution. Second, is the rather dull inclination of us supposedly superior humans to overuse and misuse antibiotic medicines. Every time we take an antibiotic to kill some bad bacteria that is infecting our bodies, a few of the infectious germs are naturally resistant to the drug. So they survive, multiply, and become a colony of superbugs that antibiotics can't touch. Multiply this colony by the jillions of doses prescribed for everything from deadly staph infections to the common cold, and we get the, quote, antibiotic paradox. The more we use them, the less effective they become. For they're creating a spreading epidemic of immune superbugs. A big cause of this is the push by drug companies to get patients and doctors to reach for antibiotics as a cure-all. For example, millions of doses a year are prescribed for children and adults who have common colds, flu, sore throats, etc. Nearly all of these infections are caused by viruses, which cannot, repeat, cannot, be cured with antibiotics. Taking an antibiotic for a cold is as useless as taking a heart drug for heartburn. The antibiotics will do nothing for your cold, but it will help establish drug-resistant superbugs in your body. That's not a smart trade-off. This is Jim Hightower saying, in fact, it's incomprehensibly stupid. Antibiotics are invaluable medicines we need for serious, life-threatening illnesses, but squandering them on sore throats has already brought us to the brink of superbugs that are resistant to everything. That's the nightmare of all nightmares.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
This is the new WHFR Journal. Jay Koronek here with you, and Dennis Reimars, and we have all kinds of stories to give you. One of the stories that Dennis and I, if you can believe this, we don't get out of the studio too much. We just read from the papers, you know. But we actually went to a luncheon of the Dearborn Chamber. That's right, Dearborn Chamber luncheon. Dearborn Area Chamber, right, because it's Dearborn and Dearborn Heights that are together. And we did hear speeches from both Mayor Poletko of Dearborn Heights and Mayor O'Reilly of Dearborn. And I'm going to see if I can queue up, because I have the whole segment here, and I'm going to try to queue up. I know exactly where I want to go here. Mayor O'Reilly made a very strong statement. It's only about 5 minutes long. Dennis, I did include this with Dennis. Yes, Dennis, going to get his microphone.
There we go. Now I'm at home.
Okay, you're on number two.
I'm on number two.
Okay.
The strong statement.
What do you think about that? You actually, for people in Dearborn Heights who have cable television out there, they could watch this on cable TV. Is it already edited?
It is. It's on the air. It went on the air yesterday. I think it shows after council meeting at 4 p.m.
What channel is that in Dearborn Heights, by the way?
If you have Comcast. I believe it's 10. If you have WOW, it's 12. And if you have AT&T, it's 99.
Okay. So you can watch the whole thing. It was a lot of thank yous and introductions of prominent people, but a few strong statements by O'Reilly and Poletko, I felt especially about Detroit.
Well, the way they did it this year, I don't know if you went last year, but last year they basically they talked about their plan and the business environment and the community for a while, and then they took a few questions. This time, they real short introductions, and they had a couple set questions that they answered. I think that's one of the ones you're talking about regarding the city of Detroit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think so. So I think I can get this queued up pretty much to the start of Mayor O'Reilly's comments. And the question was, what about Detroit? You know, it's right next door. Actually, I wasn't aware, but Dearborn Heights has a little border with Detroit, too. It sort of stretches right across, I guess, northern side of Dearborn.
That's right.
So in any event, here is John B. O'Reilly Jr. Responding to the question about what about Detroit and its influence on Dearborn and Dearborn Heights, for that matter. So let's take a listen.
Our area. Dan had mentioned about linear borders that we have with Dearborn Heights. We have at least as much linear border with the city of Detroit. So what happens in Detroit is going to impact us no matter what, as it should. East Dearborn was built coterminously with Detroit. So everything we have there, the housing stock, the way it's built, laid out, our water and sewer systems, all were put in as Detroit was putting them in to serve their own residents. So we have that same issue of how old the equipment is and so on. Now, we've been able to keep them up. We invest every year. We've never, even during the recession, we never stopped investing in maintenance on our water and sewer systems. But still, we understand, you know, what the challenges are. But you know, we can talk about success, we can talk about who we want to be, but without Detroit being successful, we're going to find that we're going to be woefully challenged. So I'm a big booster of Detroit. I believe we've all got to see Detroit succeed. The downtown, midtown area is going great, but that's a limited portion of the city, and there really needs to be a lot of work done, and I think at this point the state really has to become engaged. I don't see any other way. But given that, we work with them very closely. Our Chief Haddad is here. We actually applied for a grant that we initiated, wrote, and planned. but the money went to both Detroit and Dearborn to add additional overtime and stuff for police to do border stuff on border crimes, particularly related to youth. So we work with Southwest Detroit and our south border in Southeast Dearborn, and it was incredibly successful. And we work with them on other projects. We've had the relationship we have now with their police department is better than it's ever been. So those are important to us. But Detroit, our whole region, you know, we are defined as Detroit, so we have to have a realistic approach. The past is the past, and you know what's happened has happened, but there's a lot of factors there, and some of them are not really Detroit had some bad policies. There's no question. I can go into detail. I'm very familiar with the process of basically the way I'll sum it up is every time they found they had a revenue shortfall, they came up with a new revenue, new tax, new way to get it. And they had unusual taxes that no other city in Michigan had. So they did kind of take the wrong tack. It was always find more revenue rather than cut. So they have a really big challenge, because with the 700,000 people that are left out of a once 2 million population, a lot of those people don't have the capacity to really pay revenue to help support the city. So there's some real challenges there, but they're ones that have to be met. I know Mike Duggan very well, and I've worked with him in the past. Dearborn has some real opportunities with the Detroit Intermodal Freight Terminal, which is physically in Detroit, but the main entrance and where most of the traffic, the truck traffic, is going to come in and out is in Dearborn. So I look forward to working with him on how we can exploit that and create new business opportunities there. But like I said, he's very capable, he's bright, but again, you know, all of us watched what's going on. There was a lot of denial, a lot of still people who didn't want to admit that there had to be some extreme measures taken in order to make them succeed. I think we're past that now, and the state election being this year, I don't think you're going to see a lot of movement, but I'm hoping that beginning the next year, we can see some real activity toward a comprehensive plan on how to stabilize and at least keep, you know, give Detroit an opportunity to succeed. It's really important, and also to make sure we're all safe, because, you know, the other thing, again, going back to the chief, is, you know, criminals don't really, they don't limit themselves to communities unless you can convince them that they're not successful. You know, you'll see the crime reports in the paper that we have now. I'm the one who encouraged that. I told the chief, let's tell them what's going on. Let's also show them how often we catch them, because hopefully the criminals will tell each other, stay out of Dearborn or Dearborn Heights, because they're going to come after you, and we just discourage them from committing crime. But crime isn't going to go away unless we really have a comprehensive plan.
What we're observing, both in the city of Detroit and Wayne County, is just devastating to this particular region. When I was at Ford Motor Company, I know that oftentimes we were more interested in the taxation.
Just for our listeners, this is the comments on that same question about Detroit from, this is now Mayor Dan Poletko of Dearborn Heights.
And can you imagine, like, doing a Google search of Wayne County or the city of Detroit, and then all this stuff hits you, all these trials, all this bankruptcy? Is that someplace where you might want to consider locating a new business or expanding? I'm really concerned about the fact that we have gone beyond getting a black eye as a community. And I know that I have not done a lot of traveling in the last couple of years, but when I do travel, or I'm a big auto racing fan, and I'll go to certain sections to different tracks, and people right away, where are you from? And I go, I'm from Dearborn Heights. Well, Dearborn Heights, where's that? Well, normally you will connect and you say, I'm in a western suburb of Detroit. Oh my God, you're from Detroit? We hear things. And that's it. I mean, look at the negativity in the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times. These are major worldwide red newspapers. Look at the stuff that's been on the TV, on the internet. That is going to take some time to change. But I am convinced that things are going to get better, and I think we're starting to see things get better.
Okay, so that was about 40 minutes of commentaries on current events, and Dan Poletko, last year, I think more so than this year, used it his time as a State of the City address.
Exactly.
And it was a little more formalized, mm-hmm. and he actually only spoke, according to my notes here, 5 minutes in terms of his first speech, which is supposedly a State of the City. He was, I don't know, you want to summarize it, Dennis?
What they did this year was a little different. First of all, it was in a different venue. Last year was at the Warren Valley Country Club on mm-hmm. Warren Road in Beach Daily. This year it was at the Dearborn Hills Country Club. And I thought it was, they just did a great job there. I want to, you know, give a nod to them, and the food was good.
Yeah, it's a fancy facility, or it can be, if you want to. Mayor O'Reilly was plugging it as a potential banquet rental for anybody.
Yeah, he brought that up. And all I know is that I was busy the entire time they were speaking, which coincidentally was when they were serving dinner, and Jay was kind enough to not let them take my plate, so I had a chance to eat.
I let it get cold, but I didn't
let them take
the plate. You know,
I didn't want you to sit on it or anything.
They probably had a microwave in the back.
But anyway, mm-hmm. first I want to say that the opinions expressed on the show are not necessarily those of anyone here at the college or the station, basically this was a little different format too. Last year, like you said, Mayor O'Reilly actually put away the notes that he had or the actual speech that he had. He said, you know, I have this. He said he nodded to Mary Laundros last year and said, I thank you, but I'll use this at my official State of the City. In the meantime, and then, of course, he went ahead and spoke for a half hour off the top of his head.
Twice as much as Mayor Poletko.
As he can.
Well, but if I can summarize about Poletko, though, in terms of what he said, which is only in 5 minutes, things are going well. They're making a profit each year, and this year they're projected to, have an extra amount of money coming in, which they need because they have a deficit. They're on a 5-year plan working with the state of Michigan. They're not under emergency manager, but they were kind of in debt a couple years ago, yeah. And so the state said, you've got to have a plan here for this debt reduction. And so because their budget is going to provide a couple $1 million profit last year, about $1.5 million or so this year, they're on track to getting out of that debt, and then, of course, keeping a balanced budget. Imagine if they can keep the same profit going in 3 more years. They'll have an extra $1.5 million to spend, after they pay off the debt.
But you're right.
Of course, costs keep going up, so they're probably.
But 3 more years is the plan. It was a 5-year plan.
Right.
And yeah. But because of that plan, and because they're adhering to it, they've eliminated the need for the emergency manager, too. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it's cool when your community, the fate is in your own hands, and that's basically what the Dearborn Heights administration is working on.
Right. And we'll hear more from Mayor O'Reilly. We hope to broadcast live. It looks like we have the go-ahead from management here at WHFR. Just in case you're wondering, because they do allow the public to come in and listen, it's going to be at the current City Hall on Schaefer Road and Michigan Avenue, in the Council Chambers, as usual, where the City Council meets on Tuesdays, once a month or twice a month sometimes, mm-hmm. and it'll be on February 26th. So circle that date, February 26th. And they usually start at 7 p.m., mm-hmm. But it's going to be broadcast live right here on WHFR, technology permitting, of course, but they've given the go-ahead. Mayor O'Reilly said, yes, do it. Hope he remembers.
I have a feeling he will.
And Dennis and I will be there to help that live broadcast right here on WHFR. But certainly you can go over there and attend for free. I don't know if they need RSVP, but they certainly want people seated before it gets started, I know.
Sure.
So.
And we're not afraid to, if we can grab somebody for a quick interview, we'll do that, too.
Yes. Oh, yeah. As well as those opinions that we have to qualify and excuse in advance.
Right. in advance.
I so we'll hear more from Mayor O'Reilly about the city, but I think he thinks we're doing okay, too. And there's a lot of things to proclaim about. Sort of, Dennis, did you get a chance to hear Snyder's address last night?
No,
Governor Snyder's? Okay. He went on more than an hour.
Really?
I thought, what is this, Bill Clinton? I mean, he went on and on, and he's mentioning things like going after certain invasive species and so on, and he was criticized this morning. I'm sure all the major media picked it up. He hardly mentioned anything about Detroit's situation,
yeah.
Other than, well, I hope it's going to work out in the next year. And then he introduced Mayor Duggan, mm-hmm. Who was there in Lansing to stand up and wave. But nothing about other deals or negotiations behind the scenes. It's interesting today, for those people who haven't heard the news, maybe I can be the first to tell you that the federal court judge that's supervising Detroit's bankruptcy said to Kevin Orr, you can't do things the way you thought. You can't pay off those banks for $167 or $165 million and clear that debt. You know, the judge said, and I think they settle for, you know, it's a fraction of what Detroit actually borrowed, but it wasn't all that little. And the judge said, go back and negotiate with them. That's too much money to them. Because most of the people that are owed money by the city of Detroit will probably only get 5%, something like that back.
I think a lot of them will feel fortunate to get that.
Yeah. Right.
But that's how these things, and I mean,
that's how it usually works out. And so the banks, because it was some sort of protected loans mm-hmm. they gave to Detroit, they should have been able to get like almost everything up front mm-hmm. before anybody else, all 100% of their money. But then they agreed for 60%, 50%. That was the $165 million.
But that could very well be because of what happened. They were worried that a judge would come along and say, hey, wait a minute, you know, that's still too much.
Yeah, so the judge said it's still too much. But now, you see, Kevin Orr was going to borrow $250 million mm-hmm. from somewhere. And they don't know if the bank, whichever bank it was, Wells Fargo or whatever, is going to give him that money, because paying off that debt to the other banks would have cleared the deck there. Made them less indebted overall. So without that paid off, it's still a liability. There's still money they're going to have to pay on a regular basis. So, but the judge thought he could still get at least $120 million to get some good things happening for Detroit, pay some bills and keep pension money flowing and so on. But Snyder said nothing about all the proposals to save the DIA collection, you know, the artworks, or to preserve the pension funds to any level. He said nothing about that
at
all.
Two of the hottest things going right now.
And he did say, and I take offense here, about the schools, you know, we've raised the money to the schools, K-12. I notice he didn't mention the universities where he's continued to cut, okay, or hold no increase for 5 years, or the last 4 years that he's been there approximately. 3 years, 3.5 years? How soon we forget. It seems like forever. Anyway,
since we had that phone call from
him. He said, he was speaking without a teleprompter for over an hour.
Really?
He's got some little notes, and he's just winging it. You know, yeah, I could do it, but that's probably why he went on so long. I had to introduce his daughter, who had a great program in her high school, and that's all wonderful. But the point is, he said, you know, the kids are getting the students in Michigan are getting now $640 more than when I came in office under Granholm, and today it was clarified. No, that money went in. That's a required contributions to teacher pension funds. That money never got to the kids. So all the superintendents around the state are saying, and even the employed teachers are saying, where's the extra money? We're not, no salary increases, no extra money in the district to spend on anything. Okay, so he's definitely just picking and choosing his selective facts there. That $640 per student has never got to the students. And I'm not saying the obligations to the teacher pension funds, which I'm benefiting from right now as a retired teacher.
In the interest of full disclosure.
Shouldn't be followed through. I mean, you make those commitments, folks, and I believe this is the Detroit pensioners and GM pensioners. You should follow through on them, and somebody should have budgeted for them. Somebody should have managed it properly. It's a collective responsibility. And I should mention, it's in the state of Michigan Constitution. Public pension funds are sacrosanct. When they're agreed to and then when they're taken, they have to be fulfilled. That's in the state of Michigan Constitution. And I thought it was interesting that someone I heard a couple days ago, or was it Lessenberry or whatever, but they said, you know, this is terrible in Michigan that a federal judge can tell us, oh, don't worry about those pensions. What does a federal judge care? He's not looking at state law.
Right, he's not loyal to the Constitution of the state.
So this person, I don't know, was some elected official, and it was a good recommendation, someone should take that lawsuit all the way to the Supreme Court in Michigan, because it's Michigan state law, specifically in the Constitution, that public pensions can't be cut, okay? That what you promise, you have to stick to. And, you know, and then when the state Supreme Court, which is appointed by mostly Republicans, you know, says, no, we can the heck with the Constitution. Okay, well, if they say that, then we can go to the federal government, U.S. Supreme Court, and get a final ruling based on the law right here in Michigan. Anyway, Snyder said there was this increase for K-12 per student. It never got to the students. That's not true. The schools have not gotten more money from our state, and we all know that if we want to keep people, raise them up from poverty, give them opportunities, then education and healthcare, I think, are the two most important elements. And that has, no increases there. Okay, Snyder, to his credit, I will say this, he did get the Republican-controlled legislature to allow Affordable Care Act to come into Michigan, saving Michigan hundreds of millions of dollars, by the way, but also improving the health of our citizens, or at least those that sign up too. And so that is a small step in better health care. But education for K-12? No, they didn't make any steps at all, folks. So you can't give him any credit, or the Republican legislature any credit on that one. Well, let's move on. We've got three big stories from the Press and Guide that have just broke over the last 2 days. Where do you want to start, Dennis?
I wanted you to handle this one because you have the more complete version.
Want to start with it? Okay.
Go ahead. Yeah.
All right.
This bothers me, by the way.
Just today on the Press and Guide website, Press and Guide, by the way, I didn't get my Wednesday paper. Yeah, not even this morning. I checked my bushes. I checked under the snow.
Your neighbor has it right now.
I didn't get my Wednesday edition, but I went online, and a lot of their major stories and commentaries are there, pressandguide.com. Okay, civil rights groups, politicians condemn anti-Muslim Republican official. Three civil rights groups and five politicians have condemned anti-Muslim comments made by Dave Ajema. That's A-G-E-M-A, who is a former state representative in Lansing government from Granville, Michigan. One of those rural areas. Is Granville near Lansing?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And a member of the Republican National Committee. He's one of the core Republican National Committee people. Okay. Is there 20 or 30 on their committee? Maybe there's more than that. But excuse me, he's speaking for the Republican Party as well as having been part of Michigan government. And what did he say? Okay. And I'll tell you who complained about this. On his Facebook account page recently, he said, and I'll read the whole posting, okay, just so you can judge yourself. Have you ever been to a Muslim hospital? Have you ever heard a Muslim orchestra? Have you ever seen a Muslim band march in a parade? Have you witnessed a Muslim charity? Have you seen Muslims shaking hands with a Muslim Girl Scouts? And they have sick in there, which means he was ungrammatical when he was doing his finger typing of his Facebook account, but it's okay. Have you ever heard Muslim shaking hands? And I don't know what it means. Muslim shaking hands with Muslim Girl Scouts. I don't know what that means. But and have you seen a Muslim candy striper? That's the volunteers that go and help in the hospital. Usually nurses are dressed in these red striped outfits, and they're called candy stripers, volunteers. And finally, he said, have you ever seen a Muslim do anything that contributes positively to the American way of life? Now, I guess he could say, I was just raising the question. I didn't say one way or other. I just raised the question. Mm-hmm. Well, of course, what he's implying is it's impossible to say yes to any of these things.
Right.
Now, when he says, have you ever seen, I'm wondering if he's only watching the Fox News cable TV channel or something, because for some strange reason, I've never seen a Muslim shown in a positive light on Fox News.
Really?
I could be wrong, because I don't watch 24/7 Fox News channel. That would hurt my health, I think, in the long run, as well as my mental stability. That's my opinion, of course. So three civil rights groups issued a joint statement, and they are the Council on American Islamic Relations, the Michigan Muslim Community Council, and the National Network for Arab American Communities. But also, they were joined by Wayne County Executive Robert Fracano and four state representatives, of course, from this area, you might expect. Democrat from Dearborn Heights, David Kanizek. Democrat from Dearborn, George Duraney. Rashida Tlaib, that's T-L-A-I-B, Democrat Detroit, and Vicky Barnett, Democrat Farmington Hills. So all of them are asking Governor Rick Snyder to denounce Ajema, who also recently criticized, this is only a week or two ago, the LGBT, don't want to forget anyone there, that's the Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Community acronym. I don't have that comment here. but it probably wasn't anything better than what he said about Muslims in general. Shame on him. It's interesting. Fecano said that he's personally inviting Ajima to visit Wayne County, and he'd give him a tour. Maybe he'd show them access, and he'd show them their health center. He'd show them a list of the concerts that they've sponsored, all with Muslim artists, and or another artist too. I mean, and of course we remember the Concert of Colors at WHFR's part that was organized and set up originally by Access and Ishmael Ahmed, a great friend of our station. Have you ever seen? Give me a break. Talk about insensitivity and inappropriate language. And, you know, it's only my Facebook account. Come on. Anything that's out there in the media is out there in the media today.
What I think was really interesting is Vicki Barnett, Democrat from Farmington Hills, representative from Farmington Hills, she had a very strongly worded, I'm going to read this directly. This was her response. She said, "It's time Republican leaders in the state stand up and say that National Committeeman Ejima's statements have gone too far, are bigoted, and do not reflect the values of their party," Barnett said. "They've allowed this behavior to go on for far too long. Our citizens, regardless of race, religion, and sexual orientation, make positive contributions in our community every day. Governor Schneider should denounce this hate speech immediately and call for his resignation. He should do it publicly, and he should do it today." That's okay. Firm.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm... So, yeah, there you go.
Now, Snyder's office got this yesterday and did not respond, did not even issue a statement as of yesterday, Thursday morning, and certainly he made no comment in his State of the State address.
And the leaders that were responding to this, the Democrats, their response to his silence is that's making it worse. It's almost justifying it. And you can see that argument, right?
Well, Ajima may still live in Michigan, but, you know, technically he's not part of Michigan government anymore.
Right.
But he is a Republican, and he's part of the Republican National Committee. So I would think Snyder would want to distance himself, but maybe he doesn't want to distance himself too much from Republican majorities in the House and the Senate, because he does have a bunch of bills he wants to pass. He's not in favor of Asian carp. Did you know that?
Well, yes. I'm not surprised.
So, and
I heard he likes salmon.
Yeah. Okay. A couple other big stories again from Thursday, yesterday in the Press and Guide. Former chamber director says that the city of Dearborn is anti-Arab, anti-business, and of course Mayor O'Reilly angrily denied those accusations. Now he's not saying the city of Dearborn is anti-Arab. He's saying the city administration, I think.
Right.
And it's a very specific thing. So again, the title, the headline, if you see it in the Sunday edition of the Press and Guide, you have to understand that it doesn't represent what you think. And the next story we're going to do, too, doesn't represent. Here's the situation, folks. An owner of a warehouse area that previously was used for something, Sam Hamad of Domini International, lost the warehouse and two adjacent vacant lots on Turn Street in Dearborn to foreclosure after missing a delinquent property tax payment with the Wayne County Treasurer's Office last year. Apparently, it says later in the article, he hadn't paid his taxes for 5 years.
But according to his response or his rebuttal is that I was out of town. There was a family member overseas that had died.
Yeah, he was out of town. But this was like the final notice he was out of town for.
He wasn't there for
he
five
knew
years.
Taxes weren't being paid for years. This was the final notice before it went into foreclosure. So he argued in front of the city council for an exception. And his brother-in-law came in to, try to help him out. His brother-in-law, as it turns out, is the former executive director of the American Arab Chamber of Commerce, Nasser Beydoun,
sure,
who did step down a few months ago for reasons we don't have to mention in this show.
Yeah.
But
he came to his brother-in-law's defense.
Yeah, he came to his defense. He said the fair thing to do was to sell the property back to Hamad, well, it's H-A-M-A-D, Hamad, who missed the tax payment because he was out of town. By not doing so, Beydoun said, the city is hurting the Arab-American business community, which is trying to help redevelop the city. People on the council, Councilman Mark Shushanian, Bazzi, other council members, said, look, we can't make any exceptions here. You know, if we make an exception for one person, you have to make an exception for all. And then we set an example of, hey, anytime you don't want to pay taxes, don't worry about it. Let it go for years, even into foreclosure. And then the city, because of the prior precedent, you just can go and say, oh, gee, I forgot, or whatever. and you can buy back that property. So you don't have to pay taxes for years, and then I guess later when you buy it back, you have to pay back taxes maybe. I don't know. After foreclosure, I don't know. But sure, I understand most of the council people that spoke in this article said, you know, we can't make exceptions here, no matter what the reason is. You had plenty of time to respond to the taxes. And so what does the mayor want to do? Well, this and the city, this warehouse is in or right next to a residential area. And so the city planning ideas, which were expressed a few weeks ago by the mayor or someone else from city government here in Dearborn, said we need to sort of separate industrial from residential.
Sure.
For a number of reasons. And the city, in fact, has sold a few of these vacant foreclosed properties for somewhat bigger residential lots because everybody's looking for a little bit bigger lot than what they used to be.
Isn't that a great idea?
And they sell if they're just a little bit larger. They're not the 30 feet wide lot, which is these days, I'm sorry, it's like living in Canada. Canada has very narrow lots, very long and deep lots in Toronto. It's amazing. It can be 150 feet deep, but they're only 25 feet wide.
I know.
Very, very strange, but that's the way they did it. And everybody's got backyard, let me tell you.
Yeah.
The narrow backyard, but they got a heck of a backyard. You can really throw those frisbees down there. But nonetheless, so Nasser Baydoun, I think, was implying a lot anti-Arab American business attitude by the city. And I think the council, even O'Reilly, too, said that's, you know, that's not what they're doing here. And apparently, according to the reporter, O'Reilly and Baydoun in particular argued after the meeting.
Yeah.
O'Reilly said the city can't control if a business chooses to close and that other area cities like Birmingham, Royal Oak, Berkeley, and Ann Arbor have the issue was paid parking is against businesses, and we'll go, that's the next issue we're coming into here, too. Did paid parking have anything to do with the fact that there's three businesses in West Downtown Dearborn that are going to be closing within the next 4 to 6 months. Dennis, you have that in front of you?
No.
I can go down it. Okay, the three are...
Oh, I'm sorry.
Double Olive,
mm-hmm.
And then Kernan Steakhouse, and also Silky's Martinis and Music, which is
behind
colloquial Silky's Bar. It's really connected buildings.
Yeah.
Silky's used to be the banquet area.
Exactly.
The banquet hall area that they'd rent out, the Kernans would rent out.
Great music.
And then one of the Kernan brothers took on Silky's as his primary business. And apparently, now, first of all, folks, as it says here in this story and the other story, the title says trio of businesses in West Downtown Dearborn will close. They're all going to reopen. And apparently they're all intended to be bars again.
They're similar
or
to
foods.
What they're, right.
Yeah. So we're not going to have three vacancies there. Some of the Kiernan brothers, or one of the Kiernan brothers, did mention that their businesses started going down 10 years ago. Well, interesting, that's when Silky's opened, was 10 years ago.
That's right.
Maybe they should have stayed with the banquet hall thing. But 10 years ago, was that paid parking?
No. Paid parking started
more recently.
Six years ago.
I think it was more recent.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Time flies.
Yes, it's
more
recent.
So Baydoun went afterwards with O'Reilly and said, paid parking was another reason that everybody's being hurt there.
Well, of course, O'Reilly points to other cities that are doing it successfully, right?
Yeah,
Ann Arbor,
right.
Royal Oak, Birmingham.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's these are complex issues. They're a lot more complex than that.
Well,
it's true. We've lost a few businesses, and the owners in West Dearborn said it's because of paid parking, like the bookstore closed. But I'm sorry that man that ran the wonderful bookstore, magazine store.
Which one?
What was it called in West
Dearborn?
Little
Professor?
Yes, thank you. He was about retirement age.
Sure.
So he was considering retirement anyway.
His sons did not want to take it over.
He said it's going to be more difficult and probably it's going to decline. But I think they had their own lot, or was that a city lot behind them?
City lot behind them.
There was a city lot behind them. So they, you know, paid, if people wanted to come in for just like 30 minutes to grab a paper or something.
It's free.
Is it free anymore?
Oh, not anymore, but it
not
was
anymore.
Up until
30 minutes you could get in and out for free, but not anymore because, of course, Little Professor is not being there. But that was nifty for the market.
Of course, Little Professor
30 minutes, but
added on, and they had their own cafe, and I remember hearing that the sons got involved with the process at that point, of the owner's sons, and they put a lot of money into making this a cafe as well.
Right.
And then Pat Stagg and his wife bought it and became the Little Cafe, and then it's changed owners since. But, you know, that I can't figure out why Little Professor. I thought that was the ideal spot for a store like that.
Yeah, I've said before, and if you, well, what's Kornick's opinion? Well, who cares? But, you know, that paid parking was certainly a decision made too early on. We didn't have full development. That extra hotel and so on is supposed to have gone between the parking towers. In fact, the parking towers were premature. With hindsight now, we know there's almost no one parking in those parking towers. They're a little bit too far away from the center of business, and the rest of the development under Mayor Michael Guido didn't happen, and there's still a lawsuit, I think, that's tied up about with the developer not finishing the plan that they promised. But I think the parking towers and paid parking were premature, but you know, I think business has and people have gotten accustomed to the paid parking now. And
with the new train station going up and an influx of people.
See. It should only be better for West Dearborn.
I would think so. And I would think if they temper it, and I think you don't pay on Sundays, correct? I don't think holidays are Sundays. And I think that's traditionally a different... neighborhoods too.
Speaking of Sunday in West Dearborn and the market I mentioned, forget that the free winter market continues through April on the third Sunday of each month. And that's coming up this Sunday, the 19th, at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. Free admission. And so go on over there, 11 to 4. Fresh food, locally grown if possible, maybe indoors locally grown, and other vendors marketing a variety of products. So go check that out at the center this Sunday. And it is from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m.
I want to congratulate the former fire marshal for the city of Dearborn Heights. He is now, he was just sworn in this past Tuesday. I got a chance to be there. He is the new chief of police for the city of Dearborn Heights. He replaced
new fire chief.
Yeah. The former fire chief, Andrew Gurka.
I loved Andrew Gurka. Mm-hmm. And always looked so young and dynamic. He's been on the show many times, mm-hmm. giving fire safety tips and talking about their special programs in Dearborn Heights. And I thought he was extremely young. Of course, anyone a year younger than I think is extremely young. Like you, Dennis, you're just a baby, but compared to me. But he after 28 years, he took retirement from the city of Dearborn Heights.
Now he's in White Lake.
And now he's fire chief again in White Lake.
He's got a little bit of
so
a
So maybe
travel.
There's fewer fires out there about. But
I really, really had liked and admired and respected Chief Gurka as well, and I feel the same way about Chief Brogan.
Brogan. Brogan's been part of the Dearborn Heights Fire Department before. And so he brings a lot of experience to this. And maybe we can have him on the show here, or maybe the Dearborn Heights News and News.
He's a great interview. He's mm-hmm. funny. Good guy.
Which didn't happen this last Tuesday, folks. It just Dennis and I were out covering this event and stuffing our face with lunch.
And the host of the show was at the event. He was required to be there as well. So
yeah. So, but next month, second Tuesday from 1 to 2 o'clock, and also archived on our website whfr.fm, Dearborn Heights News and Views.
All right.
We hope we'll return. Craig, just a couple other stories here in the 3-4 minutes before the Great Blues Show with Joanne Kurczynska, Highway 61 from 2 to 6 p.m. begins. And Joanne is already here pulling fantastic CDs to play for you on the show. I was interested, Dennis. Well, first of all, a little note here. The city of Dearborn wants to remind you there's an interfaith Martin Luther King commemorative service on Sunday, all faith, Sunday, January 19th. And that is where?
Here. You got it right there? All right.
Somewhere here.
We have these papers everywhere, folks.
Yeah, there's so much news.
This would make great TV.
Yeah. and it's going to be at the Littlefield Presbyterian Church, and that's on Littlefield Boulevard, would you believe?
Okay. That's how it's got its name.
Okay, and that's Sunday at 3 p.m., so that's the commemoration of Martin Luther King Day, which is actually Monday.
And I was told by somebody here at the college to let people know that while you cannot go online to register for Martin Luther King, going out and doing charitable work or day of service, you can show up 8 a.m. on Monday at U of M Dearborn, and you will have stuff
given
to
an
do.
Assignment.
Thank you.
And this is not just student ages.
No, this is ages. Everyone. Anybody can help.
8 a.m. Somewhere at U of M Dearborn.
It's the union?
Their union.
Thank you.
Okay.
That's where it is.
All right. Also,
trash pickup's normal.
Trash pickup is normal. So the trash people are not respecting Martin Luther King Day.
But everything else is closed.
If Monday is your pickup day for trash in Dearborn, but everything else seems to be closed.
Right. Won't get mail. Can't go to court.
I don't understand what's with the trash people. I guess they didn't want to work the following Saturday. Is that Super Bowl weekend?
But that's a good call. You know what I think happened? I think they got so far behind because of this weather that they
maybe they're not caught up yet.
That's a guess.
Here's another story. You got 2 minutes to go. Healthcare center is in works for Westwood Middle School.
Yeah.
Is Westwood in Dearborn Heights, Janice?
No.
Where the heck is Westwood?
You know what? I don't know. That's a great question. I know there are high schools, and I know those school
Westwood.
Districts.
Westwood. Isn't that one of the Dearborn Heights? Yeah, it says Heights.
All right,
yeah.
There you go.
Okay. Now, get this.
I'm going to learn my
school. This is the Oakwood Healthcare System. They have gotten permission to actually, and they're going to redevelop or renovate part of the Tomlinson Middle School to have the Oakwood Teen Health Center. Now, you say, well, that can't be bad. Well, first of all, why is it Oakwood? Why not Henry Ford Hospital? Or they were the first ones to propose it. What's the deal there? Are they paying for the renovation? It seems that Oakwood Teen Health Centers are also, there's two of them. There's one in Wayne County. Two in Wayne County, in Taylor, and Westland. Okay, is that six? And they're going to start as a modular, that is like a trailer at Tomlinson, then it's going to be accommodated inside the school. Now, the only thing this story doesn't say, and this is in the Times Herald this week, maybe they'd be more in a press and guide somewhere. So first of all, who made the bidding process? Are they giving money to the schools to have that? Are they renting the space? I mean, there got to be some payback.
Who wrote
and
the
then,
article? Okay, Bob Oliver
Bob Oliver. Right. And then, what are they doing for the teen health? Are they counseling on how to use birth control pills or diaphragms for the girls?
You don't know.
I mean, what are they? Are they going to stock EpiPens?
That's a great question.
Instead of Dearborn Heights, because now it's a law that the schools have to have EpiPens and someone trained
themselves
to use for them.
That's right.
Well, maybe they're saving on EpiPens this way. That's for people that have allergic reactions and breathing problems. But what are they really doing there? And why were they picked? Just because they're probably paying money to the schools. Now, I'm not against having health services provided. In the olden days, you know, these old people always talked about olden. A couple decades ago, every school had a school nurse, and they had a special nurse medical room and like a couch to lay down on, and they could dispense, aspirin or whatever. But they had medical professionals there all the time, and I think that is totally not happening now.
No. The counselors have a little bit of first aid training.
Right. They call in other people.
Absolutely.
But the schools don't employ medical personnel anymore.
No,
so an answer would be to have a healthcare center. But why is Oakwood better than Henry Ford? You say, well, they're all the same. They all have doctors. No, wait a minute. Was that an open bidding situation? Or for the sake of, Henry Ford Hospital, too, maybe they just didn't think they wanted to try to do teen health centers.
Right.
That it wouldn't lead to further business for them or more publicity or whatever, more PR. Well, we got to go.
I'm going to see Bob Oliver at 3 o'clock, and I will ask him these questions and report back next week.
That's the spirit.
All right.
Boy, investigative reporting. Look out. Here we come.
We're having lunch. Anyway, tonight, really quick, Phi Theta Kappa, American Heart Association present HFCC Walkathon. It's here, 6 p.m. to 9:30. It's at the HFCC Student Center. That's where we're located right now. Healthy refreshments available. This is to walk tonight, 6 o'clock here.
Okay.
Cool.
Yep. Thank you for listening to the new WHFR Journal. This is Jay, and thank you, Dennis.
Thank you. Thanks, Maureen Webster.
And Maureen Webster, and all the great work she's doing here, too.
Yes.
So until next week, again, you can check out all